Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on credit reporting. Credit reporting has become a hot-button topic within the ARM industry of late, as the number of disputes filed by individuals seems to increase by the day. But credit reporting still offers a number of benefits to the ARM industry, and many clients still want their third-party agencies to perform the service. We're fortunate to have a panel of experts with us today to share their perspectives on this important topic. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Microbuilt. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Let me tell you a little bit now about today's speakers. LaDonna Bowling started at Contract Callers in 1996 as manager of their utility collections portfolio. She then became a trainer for the agency. Her mission in the agency was to change the mindset of the collections staff to treat consumers with dignity and respect, showing them that you can be successful as a collector using consumer-friendly methods. She currently serves as the company's director of call center operations. She is very active with the Georgia Collectors Association and has served on its board of directors since 2010. Michelle Dove is the general counsel and chief compliance officer for IC System Inc. in St. Paul, Minnesota. She has served the ARM industry for nearly 15 years and is admitted to practice law in Minnesota and Wisconsin. She's represented her company and clients in numerous federal and state regulatory audits and litigated matters. Christy Rue is a co-owner and senior vice president of third-party operations and chief compliance officer at Credit Solutions. Before coming to Credit Solutions, Christy started working in the collection industry at the age of 16, in charge of collecting television fees for local hospitals in Lewiston, Maine. She is certified as a collector, a credit and collection compliance officer, a collection floor manager, and received a scholar designation from ACA International. Sam Shannon has been in the collection industry for over 35 years. He started as a collector in 1982 for a small lending company in Dallas. He helped develop a legal network for OSI Portfolio Services and later was promoted to Senior Manager of Compliance for OSI Collection Services. Sam has served as the Vice President of Legal Compliance for a New York City law firm, as well as traveled the country completing pre-CFPB audit with his own company, ARM Consulting. Most recently, Sam has taken on the position of Chief Compliance Officer for AmCall Systems. He is a certified auditor, a certified credit and collections compliance officer, and a certified business impact analyst. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we will get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. Today's event is an audio-only event. There is no video or slide component, so if you're not seeing anything on your screens, you're not missing out. Finally, a recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. And with that, let's jump into today's discussion. First, I thought we'd sort of take a step back and maybe just spend a quick minute talking about how credit reporting works, just to make sure that everybody kind of understands what we're talking about. And LaDonna, maybe you could walk us through that. LaDonna?
Sorry, Blonde was on mute.
Okay.
The first thing that happens is, of course, the consumer makes an agreement for goods or services, you know, with the creditor, and those things are outlined, and typically the creditor will say, you know, consequences for not paying this. If it's written off the bad debt, it will be reported to your credit, or we will credit report active accounts monthly. And so the creditor sends files over, or the debt collection agency sends files over to the credit bureaus, and that's who houses the historical data on the consumer's financial habits, if you will. That's pretty much it in a nutshell, and that's how, you know, the credit bureaus then, you know, have their own formulas for devising credit scores that creditors look at when they're looking at extending additional credit or new credit to a consumer.
Okay.
Any of my cohorts want to jump in and add to that?
No, I agree with you.
I think you covered it all.
It is for us as well.
And there's power in a credit report, you know, and credit reports can, you know, once the credit bureaus get the information on the consumer, they compile the reports, which can impact the consumer's everyday life, you know, credit, jobs, insurance, apartments, you know, et cetera. Big impact.
Sam, maybe you could walk us through quick how an agency actually goes about reporting delinquent or unpaid debts to a credit bureau.
Well, did you say me?
I said Sam, but maybe he jumped. Maybe okay. He's having a connection problem.
Okay. Well, first the agency, you know, there's the big three bureaus, you know, Experian, Equifax, TransUnion, and there's some specialty agencies. And then you decide which CRA that you want to do business with, or maybe you want to do it with all of the big three. You'll have to fill out an application, say that you have a reason for credit reporting, fill out a data furniture agreement, and the agreement typically stipulates, you know, what your requirements are. Most of the bureaus have a minimum file reporting, like, you know, your initial batch has to be a minimum of 500 accounts. One of them says 100 accounts, and I think another one says 50. Lays out all the layouts. There's a Metro 2 format that all files have to be sent over in. You also have to agree not to negotiate deletion for payment in full when you enter into an agreement to report credit. And of course, they're going to want a copy of your business license, any marketing information you may have. And then typically all three of them will require a physical inspection of your site to make sure that you're legitimate. You'll have to acknowledge that you'll adhere to their access security requirements, you know, sign a data release agreement. You know, that's going to detail your monthly reporting, your format, your legal right to report, your data integrity, and that you'll only delete again when required by law. That's pretty much how it happens.
And I'm back, Mike. I'm sorry. My connection's been like a heart monitor this morning.
No problem. We're glad to have you back. Let me ask you this, Dan. You know, when you know, all four of the eight, you know, the companies represented do report to the credit bureaus. Sam, when you do report, how do you decide to which bureaus you're going to report to?
Well, we usually, that's our client who determines whether they want us to report or not. Some clients, and we only do medical collection, so some clients do want us to report, some don't. If we report, we report to all three of the bureaus. We report to TransUnion, Experian, and Equifax. We don't make a determination as to where the consumer lives or what's the most popular credit report in that area. We've made the decision that if we're going to report, we're going to report to all of them. So that's exactly what we do.
So it's just a matter of making sure sort of you run all the bases. Is that why you're doing all three, you would say?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, most creditors do not pull three credit reports. They will pull a tri-merge, or they'll pull the credit bureau that is the principal credit bureau for their area. So since we're not second guessing them that way, we simply report to all three.
Got it. Thanks. Christy, let me ask you, what are the benefits to reporting delinquent debts to the credit bureaus?
Well, I think the benefits are, you know, fairly obvious. I think people who care about their credit will want to maintain a good credit rating. Being in collections, that kind of sounds a bit crazy, people caring about their credit, but they do. And we do find certain areas and certain demographics where that is more prevalent than others. And that could drive whether or not we report in a certain area or a certain client or whether we do not. So for the most part, you know, there's a lot of benefits, other than just the financial benefit of people wanting to maintain a good credit rating. People who try to get mortgages or any other kind of loans, will be forced to pay their collections prior to doing that. That sort of, helps move that along. There's also a benefit in, I guess, our responsibility to the overall, communities that we serve to make sure we're doing our part. When people, do have collections, it's important when they go to apply for any kind of apartment or a job, or just like LaDonna had mentioned all the reasons before, it's important for us to do our part and make sure we're getting that information out there so that other creditors can make good conscious decisions on whether or not to lend or to rent to or to hire.
Exactly.
And I guess, go ahead.
I just think that lenders should have the visibility so they can look at financial behaviors and make objective decisions, and which in my opinion keeps the cost down for all of us, because, if the lenders are making bad decisions and giving, credit, extending credit, money, et cetera, services, who do you think they're going to go to recoup their losses? The other people that are paying. So I think it keeps costs down.
Absolutely.
And I guess from my end, since we only collect on medical debt, I have more and more creditors telling me, we don't consider medical debt when we determine whether we're going to make a home loan or an auto loan. And let me use Wells Fargo as an example. They've come as far as to tell me, a person does not go out and consciously make a decision to have a heart attack. This is something that they did not do on their own accord. Therefore, their $110,000 medical bill should not be held against them. We do not consider medical debt collection reported to a bureau, and we do not consider it as far as our internal credit scoring. So for me, when I have more and more creditors telling us we don't look at this, we don't consider it, I find it to be a waste of my time.
And that is the great debate going on right now, whether or not they consider medical a true debt. So far, we haven't run into any obstacles there with our medical debt being reported, but I'm sure it's just a matter of time before we do.
Yeah, and now there's so many stipulations surrounding reporting medical debt. Well, you can't report it now until 180 days past the date of delinquency.
Yeah, 180 days past the date of delinquency.
Yeah. And then you also can't report anything that's paid by insurance. So, and we all know we have those clients that turn over accounts where somebody in their office forgot to file or what have you. And then, you get it in, you've waited 180 days, and then through discovery, you find out the consumer had insurance, and then it gets filed, and you've already reported a $5,000 flaw on their credit. So now you go in and correct it, remove it, adjust it, what have you. So I understand, there are a lot of landmines around reporting medical debt.
Yeah, we considered all of those factors as well. And at one point thought, okay, we're just not going to report medical debt at all. Things have kind of quieted in that regard for us anyway. I haven't heard a whole lot of buzz here lately. So we're going to continue to do it, but we're going to be very cautious. And some of our medical clients don't want us to credit report. And to the question earlier, is it going to affect recovery? Is it not? In our particular situations, and again, there's a lot of other factors that go into it, grapefruits and oranges, but we found that our clients that we did not report for, we actually performed better for. And again, I'm not saying that's a cause, of credit reporting or not credit reporting, because there's still a lot of factors and unknowns there.
We actually did an investigation last year because we were trying to determine whether credit reporting to medical debt was actually beneficial. So we did a study, a report, where we looked at our disputes that were filed through eOSCar, and we pulled 78,000 disputes regarding medical reporting. These were only accounts that were reported to the credit bureau, and that's what the dispute was. Of those 78,000 accounts, we removed the duplicate disputes or the accounts that we closed voluntarily, consumer filed bankruptcy, whatever the case may be. That left 38,110 accounts, individual disputes over a year's time. Now, if you're counting dollar per dollar, and you're counting how many people it takes to investigate and respond to those 38,110 accounts, you better be collecting a whole lot of money.
It is heartbreaking. Yeah.
We looked at that 38,110 accounts, and then we made the hypothesis that if a consumer pays their debt after disputing it, credit reporting was a considering factor. However, if they paid the account prior to disputing it, prior to pulling their credit report, and then filed their dispute, credit reporting actually had nothing to do with it. So using that hypothesis, only 3% of our accounts were related to credit reporting. 97.
And I think you're going to get different percentages based on different verticals as well. You know, medical is its own beast. And, you know, like you pointed out, you know, a lot of creditors don't really consider a medical debt as something that the consumer could help.
Right. And that's the only thing we looked at. Since that's the only thing we collect, that's the only thing we looked at.
Yeah.
So we looked at our accounts, and when you have 97% of your accounts not paying or paying before they dispute a debt, only 3% have to do with credit reporting. 3% of the payments.
I have a little bit of perspective on non-medical debt. We've found almost the opposite story on more retail debt or telco debt, in that when we have a client that does not have socials on all of their accounts, the credit reporting CRA rules. And so for the accounts that we report, we've seen a 20% lift just in the first month after placement, and that can be attributed to the letter that we sent, which says the debt is scheduled to be reported. So just from the letter that we send indicating reporting will happen or it's scheduled for credit reporting, we see a 20% lift on recovery for the accounts that have that language in the letter. And then overall, for performance on this certain portfolio, and again, this is in a retail market, so it's not necessarily indicative of how a medical debt will perform, but over the life of the placement, the lift in credit reported accounts versus non is almost 40%. So it's pretty dramatic over the life of the placement. But, you know, what you have to factor in, and I think it has been indicated, there is legal risk there, and there's an expense associated with disputes and investigation. So it's not just a straight 40% lift. When you allocate other expenses, it looks a little bit different. But all that to say, there certainly is, I think, on, you know, certain portfolios, there can be a dramatic increase in collections just from the credit reporting process.
Yeah, and I find that it motivates the consumers to pay when they get a windfall, you know, like when the account comes into collections and you've reached out to them, no money. Then when they get a little windfall, you know, like say, a refund, a lot of times it motivates consumers to pay because they know it's on their credit and they know that's the first step to getting it fixed is to, you know, show it as paid in full.
Absolutely.
And given consequences, I think motivates consumers to prioritize their payments. So, you know, if I have 5 bills to pay and I have enough money to pay 4 of those bills, I'm going to look at what my consequences are. Okay, well, this person's going to report me as being late to the credit bureau. Okay, they definitely get paid. Well, this person, all they're going to do is just call me and nag me a letter. Okay, I'll pay them next month and double up, you know. So I think the consumers prioritize things like that.
Excellent. I'm really enjoying this discussion so far, and I hate to interrupt, but at this point, I just want to stop for a minute and talk a little bit about today's webinar sponsor, Microbuilt. For more than 35 years, Microbuilt has been helping businesses assess and manage risk. They were a pioneer in the now exploding alternative credit data space, and as such, have refined their products and services to deliver true business value. Over the years, Microbuilt has invested heavily in acquiring best-in-class data. They built sophisticated systems for keeping their data fresh and accurate, and powerful predictive models for making decisions around lending, leasing, collections, and risk management. With Microbuilt, you can customize the products you need and how much you want to spend. And all their products are provided through a single, simple access portal. Whether you're working in originations or debt collection, screening a potential hire or tenant, planning for growth, or keeping up with regulatory requirements, Microbuilt can be your partner, providing the insight and information you need to protect your business, grow your bottom line, and keep your company running smoothly. For more information, please contact Microbuilt at 800-884-4747 or visit www.microbuilt.com, and that's spelled MICROBILT. Thanks again to Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Chrissy, I wanted to go back to something you said a little while ago when you were talking about the benefits of reporting and mentioned that you've seen a certain lift in certain demographics. I was wondering if you might be able to go into a little bit more detail about that.
Yes, definitely. If we are in a primarily heavily insured area where the patients are heavily insured, we usually have a better outcome reporting in those areas than we would a more desolate area. And not to stereotype, but we are in Kentucky, so we have some West Virginia business, which doesn't necessarily, I don't think the majority of their patients care as much about their credit as, say, a Raleigh, North Carolina, or a Lexington, Kentucky. I think there are certain demographics that rely heavily on their credit report. And I guess one of the gentlemen on the panel was talking about certain people that overlooked a medical collection on a credit report. I think there are areas that do still care about that, and then there are areas that do not. So pinpointing which areas to report in, definitely, I think you can get more bang for your buck. And I believe Sam said as well, the expense that goes into you know, responding to these disputes and the personnel you have to hire and the constant you know, going over our policy and procedure, make sure we're in line, the risk of FCRA lawsuits, all of that has to be factored into whether or not you want to report or not report.
Excellent.
Did I
Thank
answer
you.
Your question, Mike? I'm sorry.
You did. Thank you very much. It was a good segue too. Michelle, I wanted to maybe just talk a little bit about, or spend some time talking about the compliance considerations that go along with reporting to the credit bureaus.
Sure. I think if you are getting into credit reporting or you're just starting to consider whether or not you want to credit report, I think a good place to start is with the Metro 2 format requirements. And so the CDIA's website has the Metro 2 guidelines to download and really understand what the process is, what are the dispute codes that you'll be receiving, what do you need to be communicating back. A lot of the requirements are clearly stated in the Metro 2 format, and your IT group needs to really understand those as well so that you can program and hopefully automate as much of this as possible, especially in terms of the investigation process. We have recently automated some of our investigation requirements, and so we worked with eOSCAR to get a lot of that automated, which kind of speaks back to a previous comment about the expense of your investigation process. To the extent you can automate this process, you are going to see margins increase dramatically. So I think getting your IT group up to speed with Metro 2 is a good starting point. Once you have started to lay out your process, you need to document it from start to finish, document how your files are transferred, document your investigation process, document your audit processes. We had a CFPB examination that was focused strictly on the credit reporting process. And I can tell you that they were very focused. I mean, obviously they start with the documentation. You send that over before the exam even begins. But they were really focused on how we audited the process to ensure the integrity of the data that we were providing to the bureaus. And then the process to make sure that once we got a dispute, we were accurately investigating. So, I mean, you certainly have to just document. And then as you're documenting, of course, you need to make sure your documentation is in line with Reg V and the requirements for a direct credit reporting dispute and an indirect dispute, and the requirements are different. So understanding what Reg V requires for each of those investigations is important. You know, certainly get your hands around the FCRA, because that's kind of the foundation for what the standards are in terms of the federal reg. And, you know, once you have your process in place, I think you really just need to be auditing it to make sure that you're reporting accurate information. You know, certainly there's a litigation risk. And I think right now the volumes of FCRA filed lawsuits continue to increase. I think part of the reason for that is the damages that courts have awarded for violations of FCRA can be quite extraordinary. You know, consumers have been able to get hundreds of thousands of dollars in actual damages because they've shown that the mortgage rate that they received was much higher than they would have received the credit reporting, meaning that if something is inaccurately reporting and driving up a consumer score, and which causes them to get a higher interest rate on a home loan or a car loan, whatever, courts have awarded the difference in that interest rate as an award in litigation. So there's a lot, I mean, there certainly are a lot of compliance considerations. And I was recently talking with someone who is just considering starting up a credit reporting process. And I really think the best advice is just go slow and you know, become familiar with the regulations and the requirements. The CFPB has a lot of white papers that talk about what their expectations are. But go slow and test the process like crazy, because there are, if you do it right, there's a lot of benefit. But unfortunately, there are a lot of regulatory requirements that make it difficult to do.
And to add to what Michelle said about policies, procedures, and auditing your policies and procedures, if you look at the recent ruling in the Mitchell-Williams versus Capio Partners, it's a $66 debt. Capio reported it to Experian and TransUnion. The consumer disputed it. Capio sent updates to both, but the update to TransUnion wasn't received. Capio updated it manually. Well, TransUnion never updated the consumer file. Consumer pulled their credit, saw it was still there, and of course they sued. And would they go to court? And after reviewing the facts and Capio's records, they had good records, good policies, good procedures. They did their auditing. The judge said in his ruling that TransUnion's apparent failure to respond does not render Capio liable under the FDCPA. He said furnishers cannot be held liable for a credit bureau's failure to act properly on a request from a furnisher. And I know this wasn't a big precedent-setting case, but I thought that it's just very appropriate for our conversation today, because as long as you have policies and procedures and you're checking what you're supposed to be doing, you know, you can mitigate the risk on credit reporting, you know. And yes, like Michelle mentioned, there's a lot involved with it, but it can be managed. And I think you said that lawsuits on FCRA, you know, according to Web Recon, FCRA lawsuits are up 9.6% compared to last year, same time. And whereas FDCPA and TCPA are down, you know, credit reporting lawsuits are up. But again, I think the key to overcoming that is policies and procedures and checking.
Sorry, just trying to catch up on my notes because you guys are saying such wonderful things today. So we've talked a little bit about the compliance considerations. Chrissy, I just wanted to sort of circle back to you. Is there anything else on top of what LaDonna or Michelle has said that you wanted to add in terms of sort of how you approach compliance with regards to credit reporting in your shop?
Well, yeah, a few other things. And I kind of wanted to respond to LaDonna or ask LaDonna. I've noticed a lot of the FCRA lawsuits that are coming across are now including the TransUnion, the Equifax, the Experian in the lawsuit. Have you noticed that as well?
I've seen a couple of those, but I can't say that I noted a big increase. And earlier when we were talking about, you know, how do you decide which bureaus to report to? I think that comes down to doing your homework, you know, and yes, mm-hmm. You know, our clients, they'll say you report to all the big three. We almost made a decision internally a couple of years ago to not report to one of the big three, just simply because it seemed like they were always behind in processing updates and those types of things. But, you know, they seem to have gotten a little bit better. But then you have these lawsuits like this Capio lawsuit come up, and then it makes you just kind of say, well, hey, you know, this is a big, big company, and they're making these kind of mistakes and are putting us at risk. But mm-hmm. I think that they should be named if they're at fault. You know, it's not us. We shouldn't bear the brunt of everything.
Absolutely. And it seemed years ago, being in this business forever, they were untouchable. You couldn't touch them. And now they're being held accountable, which I love, because it makes our job a lot easier knowing that they're being held accountable for the information that we're providing.
Well, and we, similar to LaDonna's point, we actually did make a decision earlier this year to stop reporting to one of the big three for the same reasons you mentioned. The updates weren't posting quick enough, and they weren't, or maybe weren't posting at all. The disputes weren't being updated. And so we stopped and kind of held our breath, but we didn't notice any impact to liquidation, fortunately. And so in that case, the risk of reporting to this agency and all of the errors that were occurring outweighed the benefit, and we turned it off. But I will say, much to the chagrin of some of our clients, and we do have one client that we're continuing to report to that bureau for just because they absolutely refused to allow us to delete. So I do think you have to carefully monitor what's happening with each of the three bureaus and treat them differently, because they have different reject rules. They have different reporting that they provide back or don't report at all. So it is three very different experiences.
Yeah, and we actually did the same.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. The educating your clients is where it all starts, because, you know, a lot of our clients, for lack of a better term, they just don't know what all goes into credit reporting. So, you know, educating your clients on what your processes are, you know, like, you know, we credit report on day 35. We letter on contact. We give the consumers time to get the letter, time to digest it. We report to all three. We don't delete for payment in full, because, you know, we had a client who every day was sending us a file saying, hey, delete these from the credit they paid, delete these from the credit they paid. Hey, stop, you know, we can't do that. So I think educating your clients in what you can do and what you won't do is the first step. And, you know, we had a client that balked at us, you know, not reporting to that third agency, and, you know, gave us a lot of flack. And so, you know, it kind of made us retreat a little bit. But I think if I had to do that again today, I would give that client more pushback, because, you know, we're the ones sharing the risk, you know, or really toting all of the risk, because the client's not toting any of the risk. But I think key is educating your clients on what has to be done and holding them accountable for giving you information, because until that NCAP plan came out, you know, our clients were not giving us dates of birth and or social security numbers. You know, some half the file would have it, half the file wouldn't, and it made credit reporting a nightmare.
So we did the same. We dropped one of the three bureaus probably about a year ago as well, and we have not skipped a beat. So everything's been running smoothly, reporting to the two. And our clients, surprisingly, they definitely look to us to guide them with credit reporting, not credit reporting, who to credit report with. So there is that trust there. So we want to make sure we're doing our due diligence and doing our homework and making sure that their patients or their customers are cared for, and that we're looking out for them as well.
Absolutely.
Making sure that their information is really being reported and disputed, et cetera.
I'm dying to ask which bureau, because I'm wondering if it's just, you know, if it is the same one for all of you, or if each of you are different experience with a different bureau, but I won't ask unless anybody wants to offer it later on in the conversation. We talked a little bit about educating clients and bringing clients into this, and clearly clients in a lot of cases are driving the bus in terms of whether or not an agency is reporting to grow or not. So I'm just curious, and LaDonna, you shared, you know, the first step, but I'm wondering maybe if you could, you know, maybe share some of the other steps about how that, you know, how you sort of manage that relationship with your client, with the creditor, when it comes to reporting to the credit bureaus.
Well, you know, we agree to do what they ask us to do. I've seen a lot more in RFPs now. Seems to be a standard line. You know, they're looking for an agency that has the ability to, you know, report to all three, update, and those types of things. We have some clients that do their own credit reporting because they pretty much want to manage their own disputes and keep an eye on that. And we do a lot of utility collections, and it's the nature of the beast with utilities. You know, the customers, the consumers will go back and pay the utility because they want to get services back on. But we found that our utility customers that do their own credit reporting, the amount of directs that go to them is twice as high as the directs that come when we do our own credit reporting. We have a client in the Northeast that do their own credit reporting, and 70% of all of our payments or payments where the consumers went and paid the client. We have some others where we do the credit reporting, and about 35-40% of the payments that we get are directs to the clients. We have one client in the Southeast that handles regulated utilities and deregulated utilities, and they do their own credit reporting, but they also credit report on some active customers, customers that are getting services monthly, the customers that get appliances like a gas range, heating and air conditioning, water heater, et cetera, and they finance it for them. They credit report those monthly for their regulated customers, because typically these are people that are credit challenged and or income challenged, and it helps build their credit files, reaching out to some of the credit invisibles, so to speak. But our clients see it as a big plus to credit report, because they feel that, other creditors such as themselves need to have a good depiction of the consumer's financial behaviors. Hope I answered your question. I know I was kind of all over the place there.
No. You always do a good job. Michelle, let me ask you sort of the same question and sort of maybe what trends you've noticed from clients in terms of their willingness or their interest to report to the credit bureaus.
I haven't noticed in our telco market, I have not noticed a decrease. All of our major telco clients do credit report, and they tell us exactly how they want it done, how often, how long it stays on, they're pretty sophisticated. In retail, not a lot of change. Some of the financial service clients that we have took credit reporting back in house, so reporting in the creditor's name. After 2008, a lot of our financial services clients look a lot different now than they did pre-2008. In healthcare, I think that's probably the most noticeably changed area in terms of credit reporting. Just in that, I think that I've seen, and it's somewhat surprising, but I've seen more healthcare clients are asking for credit reporting. They're more interested in credit reporting. They want to talk about it more than they did even a few years ago, which, earlier we talked about how reporting medical debt, the value of it is questionable, and I think it will continue to become more questionable. But our healthcare clients are certainly asking about it and are interested in it. And so I think that's probably the most market change in credit reporting that I've seen by industry. But I certainly don't see disinterest in credit reporting. If anything, I'm hearing more questions about it and more interest in it.
Agreed.
Is that because people who haven't been historically doing it are looking to do it? Is that why you're getting more questions?
Yes. They're just more interested. I mean, it can be a very valuable collection tool. And I think as collecting becomes more difficult for agencies, I think that everyone's just looking for more tools and ways to increase margins and increase revenue and increase, dollars collected. And credit reporting is a good tool. So I think where healthcare clients historically have been a little bit more nervous about credit reporting or have said, we don't want to credit report our patients, now we're starting to have more conversations. Well, wait a minute, what does this look like? How can I do it? There's time limits now. So, waiting 180 days or in some cases 240 days. I think, and with financial assistance, and I think healthcare providers are just facing more and more challenges in collecting dollars, and they're starting to talk about credit reporting as another tool.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Christy, let me move on to you, and let's talk about how maybe an agency should set up a credit reporting operation. Maybe you can walk us through what's needed for that.
I think we touched on this earlier, LaDonna did. Basically, you need to reach out to the bureaus and set up and apply for sort of your ability to report. And they're really great about, hand-holding and showing you every step of the way how to actually make that happen, how to, transfer files using the Metro 2 format. And, the funniest part of all of it was way back when we did this was the actual on-site audit or on-site visit that we had from them. We had a very colorful character come And that was very interesting for us. But apparently we passed with flying colors, and you know, we've been going strong ever since. But it's pretty easy, and we talk to them a lot, and I would encourage any agency to reach out to TransUnion, Equifax, Experian. Reach out to them, ask them questions that you have. They've been very forthcoming and you know, very generous with their time as far as making sure we all understand exactly what we're both trying to accomplish, and you know, just making sure we're doing our part. You know, we don't want to get in any trouble, so make sure we're doing our part. But definitely reach out and utilize your resources at the bureaus. And we've even asked them to speak to one of our clients. And again, they're very generous with their time, very informative, and just very kind.
And all three of them have websites that are very helpful. Like if you just put in the name, like www.experian.com/data reporting, and kind of do the same thing for Equifax and TransUnion, it'll take you to the right pages, and there's a lot of frequently asked questions there, and it kind of walks you through the steps. Then after you've kind of digested that, you could reach out to them.
What about from within the agency itself in terms of what you need to kind of have an efficient credit reporting sort of function? I mean, what's needed inside the agency of being able to manage that effectively?
Most softwares are pretty sophisticated, and you set it up at the get-go. You set up at the client level, the company level, as far as how you want to report, what you want to report. So, you know, it's pretty easily done, and it just spits out a file. We review that file, of course, before it goes. And after we review and spot check things and it's ready to go, we just plug it into our formula and send it on over to the bureaus. And they send an acknowledgement rejection file back to us that we review as well. So it's really pretty simple.
Well, Donna, I know you mentioned this before with respect to the RFPs, but there seems, and maybe you can confirm this, but there seems to be a competitive advantage now that goes along with being an agency that credit reports. Is that true?
I believe so, just from what I'm seeing in the RFPs. You can ask for an exception, I would assume, and saying, well, no, we don't credit report, and see if that'll keep you in the running. But most of the clients that we deal with, you know, it's a deal breaker if you're not credit reporting. And, you know, these are your larger, you know, utility clients and, you know, some financial clients and some telecom. They expect it to be, you know, usual, you know, customary business.
Michelle, is that true on your side as well? Are you seeing it as a competitive advantage?
Yes, I agree. I mean, there's certain clients where you're not even going to get in the RFP process. You'll be automatically rejected if you can't credit report or if you're not credit reporting. I mean, of course there are creditors that don't want a credit report, so it's not universal, but I do think having the ability and having a credit reporting process that you are auditing, that's documented, that you're testing, you're investigating every dispute. Once you have all of those processes in place, you know, I just think it's a big advantage going if you were competing against someone who didn't have any of the tools or processes.
And if you look at the bigger picture in a credit-based economy, you know, credit reporting is critical. You know, how else are, you know, lenders going to know?
That's a very good point. It's deep. We've got a bunch of questions that have come in, so I'm going to stick a pin in the questions I have for the panelists and try and get to these. Again, if you have a question and want to put it in front of the panel, just type it into the Q&A box on your Zoom webinar control panel. And we'll try and get to as many of these as we can. I think Sam had some technical difficulty and had to drop off, but some of these questions, maybe some of the other panelists can tackle. The first question, how are you determining first delinquency date on a medical debt? Does anyone want to tackle that one? I guess not. That
one's very tricky. That one's actually tricky. And again, we reached out to all the bureaus and said, listen, tell us what we need to do here. So I would encourage anybody to do that and then definitely do whatever fits best for their agency. I can tell you there's no one answer. There's no right answer. There's just a best practice. But I don't want to advise anyone on how to determine that or, you know, how to gauge that. Reach out to the bureaus and ask them for guidance on that, and that should get you where you need to be.
You and found helpful?
I was going to agree with the previous comment completely, just because their date of delinquency is very difficult, and you know how you calculate it is very tricky. And so if the bureaus, if you're not 100% confident that you're getting what you need from the bureaus, I would even go as far as to retain legal advice and just double check and make sure you're calculating that right. Because I know I have a contact at another agency and they got really tripped up with the CFPB over date of delinquency. And so I think it's a great question because it is very, very difficult, but it's very important to get that one right.
And I think basically what you need to make sure you do is have that policy and procedure in place and make sure you are following it in determining date of delinquency.
Yep. And, you know, we have actually 90 days after we've reported an account to report the date of delinquency, but I don't know who does that because usually when we report, we're reporting a date of delinquency and we rely on our clients to give us the date of delinquency. And if we do have options, you know, I'm not an attorney though, and please understand that. If you didn't get the date of delinquency from the creditor, you have two options where you can establish and follow reasonable procedures to determine the date of delinquency from the original creditor. Or if you can't determine the date, you can establish and follow reasonable procedures to ensure that the reported date of delinquency is a date before the account was referred to collections or charged off. And I think you can find that in the Fair Credit Reporting Act, Section 623A, or something like that, yeah. But, you know, we tell our clients, if you don't give us a date of delinquency, you know, we're not going to report it.
Christy, in terms of you were saying, you know, your advice in terms of reaching out to the bureaus, I just wanted to follow up. You found them to be helpful when you reach out to them with these types of inquiries?
Yes, absolutely. Again, very generous with their time and very friendly with their information. This particular subject is as clear as mud. So again, you're going to get best practices, and you should reach out to all of the sources, the bureaus, your clients, your attorney, all of the above to determine what you want to use as first date of delinquency.
Here's a question that I know everyone's going to run up and try and answer. What is your procedure for mail requests from credit repair companies for validations?
We don't get those.
Lucky.
That was a big fat lie.
So I know for us.
No. Yeah, go ahead.
For us, we are going to respond back to the debtor every time. So when we get those, we'll do our validation to the debtor. We keep track of repeat offenders. We don't respond to repeat requests for the same thing.
We have a similar process where we will send out a form letter, and it basically indicates that we don't think it's a valid. If it truly is a form letter from a credit repair agency, we don't necessarily consider that a valid dispute under Reg V. And so we just have a form letter. We update it with the form letter and send that letter out. But we, once it's a secondary, third, fourth dispute, then we no longer respond.
Here's a question. Do you notice that you receive more disputes from one credit bureau over the others?
Not credit bureau, just different lines of business and different clients, absolutely, but not particularly with different bureaus.
in terms of the different lines of business, if you had to, if you kind of wanted to sort of were able to rank which ones, you know, maybe have the provide them or have the most disputes, would you be able to do that?
Telecom.
Yeah, absolutely. Hands down.
Yes.
Any guesses as to why that is?
No one wants to pay that bill. They don't. I mean, unless they want to turn back on. I don't know. People just don't feel like paying that bill, and they want to dispute it, and they want to dispute the services, and I don't know. But we were warned prior to taking on that type of business that we should probably ramp up our dispute department.
I think too, because they can transition easily to another provider and without much circumstance to do that. That's just my
opinion. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I think there's generally some confusion. I mean, we've all seen the commercials about, we'll buy you out of your contract and, you know, you can switch for free or your device is free. And I think that deal isn't always exactly that clear. In reality, no one's buying anyone out of a contract. Often you'll get a gift card back for the amount of the buyout. So, you know, when someone switches from AT&T to Sprint, Sprint isn't paying AT&T. The consumer is still obligated to pay AT&T. Sprint just sends them a gift card for whatever that buyout amount is. And I'm not picking on Sprint or AT&T. I'm just using them as examples. And so I think there's just a lot of consumer confusion about, well, I don't owe that debt because Sprint was supposed to pay it. And then we have to explain, or whoever, you know, telco A is supposed to pay telco B. Again, I'm not picking on anyone. I'm just, our reps then have to explain, well, that's not really how the process works. That's not how contracts work. You still owe the original creditor the money. And so I think that generates a lot of disputes, you know, unfortunately complaints to the CFPB and correspondence and. So telco, there's a lot of back office support that's required in the telco market.
Absolutely. There's a lot of fine print with these different contracts that people sign up for.
Right.
Okay, let's see here. I think you answered this, Michelle, but just to maybe you just want to go over it quickly. But when you made the decision to stop reporting, did you lose any clients because of your choice?
Well, the real answer is the client, we had a very large client that threatened to pull business if we didn't continue to report to the one agency. So for that one client, we didn't lose the business because we acquiesced and continued to report. For the rest of our clients, though, really the way that we approached it was to say, look, we're going to stop reporting, and in 6 months, we're going to give you the analytics on liquidation, and we're going to show you that there is no negative impact. And if there is a negative impact, obviously we'll revisit the decision and perhaps, you know, have to re-report to that bureau. But what happened is in 6 months, there was no noticeable difference in liquidation. And so for now, it stayed off. But, you know, to be honest with you, if we did see a degradation in liquidation, we would go back and, you know, reconsider that decision. But as of today, we haven't noticed it. So we continue to not report.
Here's a question. What about clients that want us to report but auto-return their account after 6 months to a year? Is that an issue with the CRAs?
No, I say no, because we're in the same predicament. We have clients who use middleware vendors that when an account gets a certain status, they pull that account back and it goes to a cancel recall status. And of course, you know, our reporting to the bureaus and updating to the bureaus is status-driven, so a cancel recall is a deletion. And that's just how it works with our clients. And, you know, we draw the line when the clients say, you know, hey, you need to delete that because they paid it and they're nice. You know, if it was put in error or something, yeah, we'll delete that. But those others, they're just systematic and part of doing business. So we have to delete them when they're pulled from us.
Okay. We have time for one more. If a consumer sends a written dispute during the 1692G validation period, is it permissible to credit report assuming that credit reporting constitutes collection activity after a verification is sent, but before the consumer has a chance to receive it.
Say what now?
I need a timeline.
Let me try it again. If a consumer sends a written dispute during the 1692G validation period, is it permissible to credit report after a verification is sent, but before the consumer has a chance to receive it?
Well, I would hope that that would just be a matter of days. If you sent the debt validation, it shouldn't take more than 3 to 5 days for them to receive it. So if the question is, are we going to credit report in that 3 to 5 day period? I would say the risk, I wouldn't do that. I don't know why you wouldn't just wait an additional week. We send our credit file every week. And so to me, I would just wait the additional week until we're confident that the consumer has the debt validation and then send the file to the CRA. I don't know that the 3 day advantage, you know, reporting it immediately versus waiting 3 to 5 days, I don't see that there's an advantage there that outweighs the risk.
But doesn't the account stay in dispute until the consumer says they no longer dispute it? So if I was going to report it, I'd report it as being in dispute and leave it there until the consumer says, okay, I don't dispute that, or remove that dispute.
I agree with that. I thought the question was more just the timing of when do you send the file over, but I do agree when it goes, it needs to be flagged as a dispute.
Yeah.
Well, we're almost out of time, but what I'd like to do is give each of the three panelists a chance to maybe share some parting wisdom or some last thoughts or any sort of additional comments that they'd like to make to summarize what they've said before or something different. So, Chrissy, if you don't mind, maybe we'll start with you.
Yes. To report or not to report, basically my advice is to do what's best for your company. It's going to be client-driven. It's going to be demographically driven. There are lots of different factors. And to just keep up with the trends, because as long as I've been in this business, it has gone up and down. It'll be a trend where, oh, don't report medical debt. Oh, don't report medical debt. Then everybody is interested in reporting medical debt. And, you know, it's just a roller coaster. So just being able to keep track of the trends that are going on and definitely look at those lawsuits. If FCRA lawsuits are up, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. Allocate some funds for that in case you have some of those hungry attorneys that want to make a few dollars. But it's just, you know, part of doing business and something that we navigate like everything else. But
strap in and enjoy the ride.
I'm sorry?
I said strap in and enjoy the ride.
Absolutely, and have fun with it.
Michelle, what about you?
I definitely think that there is a benefit there if you do it right. But I would say if you're process very carefully, have it vetted by as many of your internal colleagues, external colleagues, perhaps legal counsel. Just really set the process up carefully. And then once you have the process in place, follow the documentation that you've written. And I think we've really benefited from analytics and really monitoring the process closely. So, you know, setting minimum reporting levels, and it may vary by the type of debt. Your medical minimum balance reported may be higher than your telco minimum balance. And, just keeping an eye on the analytics. We, for a while, and I realize there's a $50 minimum now for many of the agencies that we've been kind of grandfathered past, but we were reporting $20 accounts and then getting sued on them. And the risk reward there analysis is way off. And so I think you just need to really keep an eye on the process and be smart about it. And if you do it right, it can be very beneficial.
Perfect. Thank you. LaDonna?
I pretty much echo their sentiment. I am a big fan of credit reporting because I think that, again, it's vital to a credit-based economy. And if you have policies and procedures and you're auditing and you're making good business decisions, you know, it should pay off for you in the long run.
Well said. Before I let everyone go, I want to thank LaDonna, Sam, Michelle, and Chrissy for their insights and their time today. This webinar clearly would not have been possible without their participation. I also want to thank Microbuilt for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.microbuilt.com to learn more about the company or call 800-884-4747 for more information. thank you to everyone who participated today. Thanks to everyone who asked questions and listened in. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for a recording of this event, as well as more news and webinars in the very near future. And I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.